You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Maverick Sabre. Earlier this year, he released one of 2019's best albums, When I Wake Up. It's an album that has Maverick combining elements of rap, soul, R&B, and dance music, and truly pushing forward a sound that feels incredibly fresh. He's always been inspired by various genres, but what really makes this album stand out is how it's his most personal album to date. This is music where you can feel his ambitions, you can feel his desire to open up and share as much as he can, and it's truly a strong body of work. On this episode, I got to link up with Maverick in Brooklyn to do a deep dive of his album and how it's still changing his life to this day. This is the 405 Exchange with Maverick Sabre. Enjoy. So a lot of people know your music through collaborations, but I feel like this latest album of yours feels like a very concentrated effort to really tell people who you are, at least the ideas that you have and some of the thoughts that you're having. When I Wake Up is that album. I wonder, when you began working on this album, did you have a sense of what the connected tissue was going to be that held the songs together?
No, I think when I first started working on it, I didn't even realize I'd started working on it. I'd had this kind of, you know, I'd moved into a new place. In my last place where I was living, I got kicked out for making music. Even though I was in there for 4 years, the landlady ended up kicking me out. And it kind of gave me a new lease of life when I moved into a new flat that I could actually make music pretty freely in. And I kind of started just to take my mind away from working on an album and just started making music and experimenting and kind of, you know, relearning how to produce again, I suppose. And that's where the record kind of was birthed. And it wasn't until I was maybe, you know, six tunes in that I realized, oh, this is shaping up to be a project here. And that's when it kind of all started to make sense, where I was just kind of collecting my thoughts before then.
You know, it's interesting because sometimes you do hear people say that, how they're working on an album without even realizing it, but yeah. I feel like I should add some extra context for people listening. I could see how that'd be true for you, truer than most, because considering the output you have and, like, you know, a lot of the features that you've done, it's clear that you're always working.
Yeah, always writing. I love, I write every day. I'm inspired by music every day, so it's hard not to express that in songs, you know.
It's a really beautiful thing. So experiencing this album, you know, one thing that I got with me, and I have to say, it's been really a pleasure getting to live with this album the last few months.
No, thank you.
I felt like you were definitely in a place of reflection in terms of what you were writing about lyrically, and not just necessarily about past situations or past events, but I felt like you were kind of very much using the present to look kind of forward. Is that kind of a weird thing to point out?
Nah, I think sometimes what I've done, like every album, I suppose, it's a diary entry of where my head is at. Yeah. And where my head is at within my own thoughts and my thoughts about the world around me. Or any experiences I've gone through, or, you know, feelings I've experienced, or, you know, thoughts about society or whatever. And I think it has changed a tiny bit. You know, my first album was called Lonely Out of Brave. I was, you know, had the first 19, 20 years of my life to write that record, really.
Yeah.
So that was a collection of me being what the title was. That's how I felt. I felt lonely, and I felt like I had to put on a brave front to get through, you know, my own experiences or my own view of the world at the time, and that was very much reflected in that record. The second album was called Inner Standing, and it was just a point where I was in maybe like 23, 24, 25 when I wrote that record. And it was a big changing point. I started to calm in myself a lot more. I started to kind of like get closer, I suppose, to like a more peaceful, truer version of myself, rather than maybe the erratic version that I was before. You know, I was still finding myself. And the second album was really like that click, like this is the start of you refinding yourself.
So your headspace for this one?
So my headspace for this one was like, was reflective, but was also able to look more forward than I've ever looked before, I think, and a more understanding place again of myself. It was like Inner Standing, the second album, was the beginning of something, and When I Wake Up was like, this is who I am, unfiltered, half the records made in my living room.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I wanted to say. I might never have been able to put certain songs from that album out previous to this on my last labels. They would have been complaints about, it doesn't sound like you. And I was like, this is a family album. Like, create everyone involved in this family.
Yeah.
And I think that, and me channeling that, was able to like pick yeah. something pretty true and honest.
And I think, you know, when I consider the way your career has been thus far, it makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, I have to say, with being familiar with your music and hearing how you're talking, talk about what a great thing that someone like you is able to find music as a career to go to, because clearly it's just like, you need to get these thoughts out, otherwise, to make sense of them for yourself.
Yeah, most definitely. It's like, music's been my channel of expression ever since I've been a kid. And it's like, it's my best friend, it's the thing that's there always, that understands me and I understand it. And so that's why it just naturally comes out, it's just, you know what I mean? It's part of me, and that's the truest thing I know, you know?
I do love that, man. And you know, one of the things that really caught my ear when I was listening to the album is that it feels like the songs are having like almost conversations with one another. I mean, I think that comes across in terms of just like the fact that you are the author of a lot of all these songs. But I wonder if these songs themselves were inspired by conversations you had with other people.
Most definitely. I need conversations. I need conversations that intrigue me, that make me think differently, that reinforce what I already believe. I need conversations that just like excite me and make me think and made me learn more about other people in the world and myself. And even in the making of a lot of the songs on the album, they were either based around conversation that I was having that day, or Preach, for example, was made after a 6-hour drinking conversation with the other writer on the tune, me and Charlie Perry, a good friend of mine. We sat and we wrote the tune together. He plays keys. And we'd been drinking and chatting about everything, me and him, every time we sit down. We just chat about the world, you know, like two old men at a bar, right? And literally after about 5 or 6 hours, we were supposed to be in a session, we were just chatting and having a drink.
Yeah.
And he was like, right, let me start playing some stuff. And the first bit he played was Preach. And I wrote it, and we wrote it, it was so fucking quick.
Yeah.
And it was just like, right, it was all built up. We were talking about religion, we were talking about our faith, and we were talking about, you know, our thoughts on faith, our thoughts on religion, or whatever it was. And it kind of came out. Preach was like the kind of like, I don't know, like the pimple on the skin, if that's the way to describe it. Like, it was all coming towards a point. We were having so many conversations, and Preach was just like the pimple on the skin is probably a horrendous way.
I was going to say, that's the first time I've ever heard an artist describe someone as a pimple.
Yeah, sorry.
But it's pretty sick, though.
I was trying to think of it, like the build up, and then when it leads to a point, and Preach was like the end point.
It's a very apt visual. It is.
Yeah.
The first song I heard off the album was Drifting, obviously before the album came out.
Yeah.
I remember feeling very taken by the way you were singing that song, because obviously vocal is a very key factor of like how a song is structured, but I feel like with this, it's very clear that your vocal is what's dictating the instrumentation rather than the way around.
Yeah.
Did you find the way that you approach singing on this track different than most of the other tracks?
Completely different. I had that melody in my head for ages. I was sipping in the car, and I was like, I love the melody. I was like, but that doesn't really attach to any kind of the music that I've released before. This is some like, I don't know, like Irish influence, Kate Bush, African influence. I don't know. The song and the melody and the feel that I had in my head that I was trying to get down was like, this sound is nothing that I've ever done before. And when I first made the tune, and I made that tune all completely by myself at home, kind of sat in my own world, I was like, fucking hell, I love this.
Yeah.
I was like, how is it gonna match into the music that people have already heard from me?
Yeah.
And I was thinking maybe I'll do a side project and I go under another name and put this shit out. And
that's how much you loved the song.
Yeah, that's how much I loved it. But then as time went on, I kept coming back to it and I kept being like, you know what, there's something fucking really special about this and unique about it.
Yeah.
And I can't profess to try and be like, you know, think outside the box with music if I don't actually do it myself. So why not put it under my fucking name? You know what I mean?
And Lord and behold, it's one of the songs that people have massively gravitated
massively off this record, you know, and it's a complete new direction. And it's just like that choice and the reaction to it, whether it was 2-3 people or the reaction it's got now, which loads of people really love that tune. it was such a special and unique song and so true. Any positive response to it was like just a reforming of me and what I believe in and how I express myself. It's like drifting was like saying the truest, most honest shit to someone.
Yeah.
And having that fear of fucking hell, what are they gonna think when they hear this? And then loads of people going, I understand you. I understand. I feel that way too. That's what drifting was.
Yeah. That's what I love so much about that, because it's one of those songs that's very much like, I know what he's talking about, but I wouldn't know how to articulate it, and I don't even think he would as well. So yeah, it's kind of that nice side of connection going on there.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. We should probably point out that we're at Rough Trade at the minute. You're going to be playing a sold-out show here.
Yeah.
That's the opening at Kendra Morris, is it?
Kendra Morris
is sound checking out.
Yeah, yeah.
How's it been touring with her? Because that's pretty sick. She sounds really good.
Do you know what? We haven't. This is the first show.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, yeah. So she's supporting in New York tonight. And I had Danita from Switzerland, great artist who lives in LA.
Yeah.
She was supporting me in the Moroccan Lounge in LA last week.
Yeah, yeah.
On Saturday.
That makes sense.
Yeah, man. Just two strong, fucking great vocalists, man.
That's great. Like, if you being sat here, I can tell you're kind of vibing a bit to, like, the vocals.
Yeah, 100, definitely.
Yeah, so one of the big standout songs off the album, and it's one that I feel like anyone who cares about words is going to latch on to, is Guns in the Distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those tracks that for me reminds me just how an artist can be political without beating people over the head. And for people who might not be familiar with you, I mean, you live in London,
mm-hmm.
but you're originally from Ireland, mm-hmm. which, I mean, Ireland's a bit of a second home to me. I've gone loads over the years. I have a lot of friends there.
Oh, nice.
With being an American and going there and learning about the history, it's one of those things that leaves you very baffled that it's not more widely known.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really weird thing. I bring that up because I imagine having that context of growing up there and then being in a place like London and hearing the type of conversations around politics and aggression, it must be a really kind of different experience than I imagine it would be for most people.
I think the thing in being brought up in Ireland, I suppose everyone's got their own experiences, but being brought up in Ireland, our history is the cornerstone, I think, in a lot of our upbringing. It's there, it's present, you know, from schools to being at home to just kind of, you know, generally living, it's there and it's ever present. It's present in our art, especially. It's present in our music. It's present in our poetry, and it's passionately present. And it's, you know, I feel like Irish art has always been from a beautiful point of struggle and resistance. Whether it's, you know, blatant political struggle and resistance, or whether it's struggle and resistance from within ourselves, from Yeats to Damien Dempsey, or, you know. I think coming and having that upbringing, and also being brought up between London as well. My mum's English from Hackney, and I was born in London but raised in Ireland, and then came back to London when I was quite young, like 17, 18. So kind of been brought up between the two and to a certain degree. So having both of them, and, you know, being in London and being around, you know, so many different cultures, so many different conversations, where politics and society is a very, you know, an important thing in everyone's lives. So definitely coming from Ireland gives you a different perspective on things, and maybe a different perspective on things of where they can go if they're not treated or cared for at an early stage. You know what I mean?
I feel, you know, kind of rebounding back on the song, I feel like that's kind of like the main crux of that song.
That
what
is the main crux in the song. Yeah, it's the whole point. It's that I think sometimes we wait, or we sit on the line and wait for things to get really fucking bad until we do anything about it. And it's like, what? Can you not see the pain? Can you not hear the guns in the distance?
Yeah.
Can you not see what we're not even edging? Just to say we're edging is even a lie. We're already quite a way there, you know what I mean? It's like, at what point do we collectively, as human beings, take responsibility collectively and really fucking change this every day, you know what I mean? In our interactions, in whatever it is.
What I love about that song especially, and it's kind of going with what you said about, you know, being raised in Ireland and what that's like from an artistic perspective, is that I think it could seem obvious to some that the world will inform your, the way you approach art, like your experiences and how you view the world. But I feel like in the way you point that there just now, it's in such a poignant way. Like, Does that feel good to know that the world can inform what you might want to write about? Or not necessarily good, or is there do you feel comfortable in that?
Yeah, I think for me it's like I'm an observer, and I feel like ever since I've been young I used to be really intrigued by just observing and overhearing and listening to conversations, whether it was my parents or whether it was at school or whatever it was. I always felt like an observer in everything. I don't know what way to describe that, but certain things would just spark ideas in my head, or I just was always intrigued by people and listening to different conversations from different people and different interactions, and the world will always and has always informed me, and I just soak that in to the best of my ability. Try and read as much as I can, try and learn as much as I can, so that when I do see things or hear things, I can take them in the right balanced way that then I can give out through songs.
Yeah, I love that. And you also made a good point about Damien Dempsey. He's fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, Damien fucking Dempsey is absolutely brilliant. And he's a big influence on this record.
Is he?
For me, yeah, it's a big influence. You know, I've always been a Damien Dempsey fan, but something changed in the last three, 4 years of what music and certain songs that really hit me. And there were certain styles of music that in the last 3-4 years grabbed me more than they've ever grabbed me before. Damien Dempsey's being one of them. Kate Bush and Talking Heads, Stone Roses. And then there's this, the same old greats like the Otis Reddings, the Bobby Womacks, Marvin Gaye. They'll always be the foundation of, you know, inspiration. The fucking Bob Marley's, the Burning Spears, and whatever, Bob Dylan's. Anyone great with a great voice that's got something to say, man, I'm there.
Well, I mean, you're proof. Look at you here.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but I'm influenced by everything that has been given before me. You know what I mean? So I'm just here to soak that shit up.
Being a true student.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. We're all students in this, man. Yeah. No one has, you know what I mean? There's no ownership here, man. We soak it in and we give back. You know what I mean?
I want to ask a bit more about some of your songs. I mean, Hurt Grace is one of those songs that, remind me about conversations within song. We've talked a lot about conversations that center around how songs are structured. But what I love about Hurt Grace, and whenever I listen to it, it very much feels like you're singing to someone specific. Who do you feel it is you're singing to?
That chorus I had for a little while. And it was... Initially, that song was a specific story about a young girl who'd been abused, and who'd been abused at home by family members. And it was specifically, when I first wrote and first had the idea for it, it was specifically about that, like the idea of, you know, a young girl looking out her window, lost with the world, and. Almost in a metaphorical way, I suppose, someone being on the outside, or myself, or whoever that my part of the tune represents, being on the outside, and at some sort of way trying to uplift through what is such a fucking horrendous dark time.
Yeah.
And it was the idea of how do I tell that story, because it was just something that was kind of came into my mind and was getting brought up by people, like friends of mine, who were telling me stories about their lives. And it was just something, it was a reoccurring thing that I kept hearing in parts and different people's journeys and stories. And then I sent it to Chronics, and I was like, this is my rough idea of where I'm at. And I had a rapping verse on it, which I do tonight, actually, because Chronics couldn't make it. And then he just kind of opened up the discussion even more, and it was less specific about that specific idea in my mind, and it was elements of that, it was elements of loads of other things, but just kind of breaking down two men having a discussion on a tune about fucking hell, we are here to support, man, let's fucking change this. There's a lot to be changed, and there's a lot that we've done wrong, but there are men who you know, want to have a voice and fucking change it. So hopefully other men will listen to it, and whether they're within that themselves or partaking in it, or they're just sitting on the fence, or they know their sister's part, or whatever it is, let's have these conversations, man, and let's get this shit out in the open and see what we can do to change it. And
massively, and I'd really implore people to listen to that song if they haven't heard it yet, because what's really great is that it's not just the words, it's very much the cadence and how you're approaching the singing, because there's a sense of being pained within it, within like the weight of what's going on.
Yeah.
It might also act in terms of Chronic's contribution to the song. That, I mean, people toss around collaboration a lot, like the words and the meanings for them and like the reasoning, but I feel like that this song is a pure example of what a collaboration should be, because, and I mean, it's all due respect, the way he approaches his point in the song, you could never do that.
No way.
Yeah.
And I would never have heard that on it.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing about collaboration, and that's the beauty for me, especially on my albums, I have to collaborate with people that I love and that we understand each other, and I understand what they're representing, and they understand what I'm trying to do, and we meet on more than just music. We understand what the fucking journey is we're trying to get out of this thing, and what we're trying, we believe in the gift that we, and the blessing of music, and what we're trying to put out through it. And I could send a child playing a triangle to Chronix, and he would come back with, you know, something pretty impressive. So yeah.
That's grand. I know artists are rarely fully satisfied with their work, but can you tell me a song off the album that you feel very proud of?
I think Weakness is a really fucking powerful song that when we play it, and we've only been playing it in the last 2 weeks. And the more and more I play it, the more I fall in love with it. Everything, it gets me. There's something in it that I know where my head was at when I wrote that tune, and I feel like I got across what I was trying to say fucking perfectly. Because I know how I felt, and it was literally lyric for lyric, and you know the feeling was exactly that. And there's still a little bit of part of me that every time I play it, like heals something in me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Drifting, I would say, has got to be my proudest song, because it's just purely from my own head, you know what I mean? It was just a risk. It was like, fuck it, this is the most obscure thing I've made in a long while, let me just put this shit out. And like, I got to perform it in LA the other day, and KCRW on the West Coast have been banging it and playing it, and people were singing along to it. I'm thinking, this is fucking mad.
That's fucking incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. So yeah, you just gotta, you know, be thankful for shit like that. And so
you
Drifting.
Really do. This is like almost like a bit of an aside, but it's in regards to Drifting, like, I know very little about how the body works in regards to like when you're singing certain songs. Am I right for thinking of a song like that? It's almost like you have to use so much of your lungs to sing it.
The difference, because that's what I was thinking. When I made it, I was like, fucking hell, I'm gonna have to sing this shit every night. Like, you know what I mean? Because the range is like, sipping in the car with the cops. And it's like, it's just a technique of it to get used to.
Yeah.
It's the technique of it to get used
to. That's the nice one. I only have two more questions for you, so thanks for taking the time to chat, man.
Thank you.
Honestly. You know, I mentioned before how this album is very reflective, and it kind of leads me to wonder, how did making this album change or shift your view in London? We talked a bit about it when Guns Are Difference, but I'm more thinking about, you know, when we talked about having conversations with people and how that kind of inspired your art. When you think about the fact that you were in a state of reflecting on life and the world around you, London's a city that's quite a second home to me, and very similar to New York. It's filled with so many different people. But there are things about the city, I'm going to sound kind of negative, that can like make you feel down on life, or at least...
Yeah, the fast pace, you know, the fast pacedness, there's a coldness sometimes you can get. City life sometimes is unforgiving, man.
Yeah.
And especially when maybe you're within music or art, and, you know, everyone knows you within certain industries, when you're living within the city in that industry, it can become a bit over heavy and over the top, and sometimes you need just some clarity in it. And yeah, I love London to bits, but it's, you know, nowhere is perfect, man.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, reflecting on elements, I suppose it's not necessarily London. I think any city can get on top sometimes, and for me it definitely can, and I need to go and clear my head or be somewhere else completely different.
Yeah, exactly.
But I suppose it's more like I said in Big Smoke about the reaction to Grenfell Tower and the.
That's my favorite song on the album.
The political, thank you. The political response to it, and the fact that no one's imprisoned, the fact that all them people died, and no one seems to have been held accountable for anything, and people know within who signed off on certain bits, who knew that there was a certain danger to the cladding that they were putting up, the disregard for human life. And I think that ties into gentrification, which is kind of going on in a lot of cities around the world, which is a wider discussion. And there's a part of that I don't like that's going on in London. But they're all discussions that need to be had.
It's just, it was, you know, it kind of spurred that question. And so I've lived with the album quite a bit now. When I knew I was going to get to talk to, obviously I listened to it again. And the feeling that I got from listening to it again all the way through was, what was it like for Maverick to be in a room working on these songs and then to walk outside and just interact with people? Because these songs require you to be so much in your head in a lot of ways.
I think I'm always in my own head though.
That's helpful.
Do you get what I mean? I'm always I'm an overthinker. I'm pretty sensitive in certain, not always, but a lot, I have it going around, stuff going around in my head all the time. So sometimes being outside and being around people is the kind of is a bit of the quiet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good balance.
Yeah, and I never like to remove myself from people, or I need to be around just normal scenarios, around, you know, normal people. I don't like to be just stuck, we're torn and I'm stuck in a dressing room all day, or I'm in the back of an Uber, or, you know what I mean? I need to be around fucking people. I need to experience people's thoughts and opinions and where people's heads at, because I don't feel like I'll be doing myself a service, because I want to go back and take all that information and sit and think, how do I write this? This is how I feel and this is what I've learned.
I think that's crucial. My last question for you before I let you run here is that I mentioned we're here in Rough Trade in Brooklyn in New York. You're going to play a show here. I actually saw you back in December on stage with Georgia Smith at the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Oh shit.
That was really fucking sick. And the reason I bring that up is, obviously you've been to New York several times in your life. You rap as well for your music.
Yeah,
and for people who might not know, somehow New York City is the birthplace of rap.
Definitely.
I bring that up because I wonder, what is it like for you to come to this place?
Mate, New York, I think the thing about New York is that it holds, especially for people outside America, and especially for music fans, and even specifically for fucking hip-hop fans, New York will always hold, it will always hold a really special, beautiful place in our hearts. It's like, it's the shit we were inspired by, and if you weren't inspired by it, your favorite fucking rapper was inspired by it. Exactly. You know what I mean? So coming to New York was like we were listening to fucking Illmatic driving through Brooklyn yesterday, and driving over the bridge into Manhattan and just seeing the city. And there's almost too much that's come from New York hip hop and rap wise to even go into it, man. You know, from the fucking Rakims to the Biggies to everything, man. The New Age, you've got the Joeys, you've got Flatbush Zombie, you've got such a beautiful history, and beautiful lyricism, man. I'm big on lyrics, and I'm big on people that can put lyrics in a way that tell a story that just fucking blow your mind. And New York was the birth of a lot of that in hip hop. So, yeah, it's a constant area for inspiration, man. Even just driving around the streets here and listening to tunes, you can kind of put your head in a space that you're like, oh shit, man, this is where a lot of classic stories were told. For a hip hop fan, it's just never ending with inspiration, you know?
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see how this place inspires you going forward. Maverick, that's what I'm
trying to
do.
Thank you very much, brother. I appreciate you listening to the album and giving, you know, an honest interview, I haven't listened to the album here since, which would have been grand as well, but you've actually fucking listened then.
No, massively.
I really appreciate it.
And it's really beautiful. I mean, it came out back in January, and it's kind of a funny thing to say. I almost hate saying it this way, but it's like, it's somewhat rare for something to be coming out in January and stick with you throughout the rest of the year. So the fact that your album has, it's like, you know, seriously, thank you.
Nah, thank you, man. And I just, this is the, you know, this is the first headline show in New York. I just did my first headline in LA the other day, and this is the first time doing headline shows in America. So, man, if you keep coming out, I'm going to keep coming back here even more consistently and growing this fan base out here, because I do love it out here, man.
Definitely.
There's a lot of love.
People here are going to love it.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I'm going to do as best as I can to convey that, you know what I mean?
Definitely.